tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to this hour of horror. Later on, it's Quiet Please from 1948, but first, Escape, the unofficial first episode from the series from March 21st, 1947 on CBS, called Dead of the Night.
Time to escape. Escape from now, from here, from yourself. Columbia invites you to voyage into the realms of the imagination. Each week we present adventures of men and women who escape into the misty land between the credible and the incredible. Tonight's story of escape tells of a dummy with a wooden head and wooden arms and even a wooden heart who served a master until one day this master heard him say,
"I've had enough of you. I don't need you anymore."
Escape now into the strange adventure of Eric Hickson and his dummy, Toby. This is a story told backstage in many an English music hall and London cabaret when the performers are sitting around waiting to go on or when they finish their evening show. Nobody ever knew very much about Eric Hickson, so many of the turns had played on bills with him, mostly small-time acts, for it was only at the end of a long, difficult trail that Hickson reached the fashionable West End. It was the night after Hickson's opening at the Kit Kat Club. The act which preceded his was just finishing. But instead of taking his position in the wings, Hickson was still sitting in his dressing room. On his knee was his partner, Toby, a small wooden ventriloquist dummy with a painted face.
I say, Hickson, what's holding you up? You're on in a minute.
Are we?
Of course you are. We've got a splendid house out there, and I want to introduce you.
Wait, Bigelow.
Well?
We can't go on.
What?
We can't. It's quite impossible.
What nonsense is this? You hear the dances are going on.
It's Toby, Bigelow. Toby, he refuses to talk.
Toby, your dummy?
Yes, I can't get a word out of him.
Hickson, what is this? A rib?
Certainly not.
Well, you're a ventriloquist, aren't you? At least you were last night.
Let the customers talk and hold hands.
Huh?
The stage is just as empty and we're on it.
Toby.
Hickson, what the devil are you up to?
Go on, Bigelow. Get out there and tell them we're not appearing.
So your dummy won't talk, won't he?
It's the very first time he's spoken all evening, I swear it.
Who'd want to say anything ever again after those reviews we got on our opening last night? He knows he's beyond his depth here, Bigelow. He's frightened.
Stop this gagging. Of all nights when you should want to be particularly good, with Mel Baxter in the house.
Mel Baxter? The American ventriloquist?
Yes, the star of the American Wireless.
And he married that gorgeous blonde in his last picture.
Yes, she's with him at the table out there. What kind of nonsense am I talking to this dummy?
Dummy yourself. Go on, big mouth. Get out there and introduce us. I want to see Mel Baxter.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, before I present to you our next feature turn, I'd like to call on a distinguished artist who's here tonight. You've all heard him on the American Wireless and seen him in the American cinema. Mel Baxter! Stand up, Mel! Stand up! And enjoy that well-known Kit Kat hospitality.
Ah, you very, very nice people. Thank you. Thank you. Always nice to visit London.
And isn't that charming lady with you, Mrs. Baxter?
That's right. Stand up and take a bow, baby.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you, Mrs. Baxter. Oh, Mel, did you bring your little pal, Muggsy Martin, along on this trip?
No, I didn't. The little toothpick gets seasick.
Oh, what a pity.
Yeah, it is. He says every time he sees me, he gets seasick. Well, that gag's aged in the wood, but so's Muggsy.
Well, I'm sure Mrs. Baxter is a much pleasanter burden on your knee, Mel. Thanks ever so much, and have fun. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring on an act that should make our American visitor feel lonesome for the missing Muggsy Martin. Our own British ventriloquist, Eric Hickson, and his talking timber, Toby!
Good morning.
Hey, Hickson, and go easy on that good morning stuff.
Why, Toby?
That man over there looks like the truant officer.
Well, that shouldn't trouble you, Toby. You've been a very good boy, haven't you?
Oh, yes, but I'm not in school.
Do you mean to say you've left school?
Oh, yes. Appendicitis, you know.
You left school because you have appendicitis?
Don't have it. Can't spell it.
You know, Toby, I saw a very strange sight the other day.
Oh, dear, must we go on?
Toby, I said I saw a very strange sight the other day.
All right, I'll go along with the gag. Talk about Muggsy Martin's jokes being aged in the woods.
Toby.
Let's get on with it. You saw a very strange sight the other day. What was it?
12 men standing under one umbrella, and not one of them got wet.
And why not?
It wasn't raining.
Did you hear that laugh, Pixon? They're forcing themselves to laugh. Do you blame them, Mr. Baxter?
Toby, leave Mr. Baxter out of this.
Leave me alone, Hickson. What about it, Mr. Baxter? Don't you feel sorry for me having to play along with Hickson's old jokes?
Well, now, Toby, I don't know. I have great respect for old jokes. Old jokes are not to be laughed at. In fact, one of my favorite jokes is the old one about the man whose name was Joe Hitler, and he wanted to change his name. So the judge asked him what he wanted to change it to, and he said George Hitler, because he was tired of people saying to him, "Hello, Joe, what do you know?"
Dear me. Is that strange sound laughter, Hickson?
Yes. Thank you very much for your valuable contribution, Mr. Baxter.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Hickson. I was just standing here with 11 other guys waiting for you to borrow another umbrella.
I suppose all your gags are original, Mr. Baxter.
But of course, it's a gift.
And I've no doubt that you hang up your stockings for them every Christmas.
Sure, and I always get sock gags.
Anyone in there?
Who is it?
No, Baxter, Hickson.
Mr. Baxter? Well?
How do you do? Mind if we come in for a minute?
All right. If you like.
This is my wife, honey, Mr. Hickson.
Mrs. Baxter.
Hello, Mr. Hickson.
Won't you sit down? Just throw that dressing gown on the floor.
Oh, please. Thanks.
Well, so this is your boy, huh? Nice carving job.
I'm very handsome. Don't you think so, Mrs. Baxter?
You're a dream man, Toby.
Who made him for you?
Don't put your hands on him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Haven't you done enough damage tonight?
Oh, now look, Hickson. You asked for it out there.
I asked for nothing. It was Toby. Got me into that.
Toby? Oh, now, Toby, aren't you ashamed?
I asked you not to touch him.
Mr. Hickson, you don't think Mel would steal him, do you?
I can take no chances.
Well, you sure take him seriously, don't you? Well, relax. I do all right with Muggsy, my own dummy.
So I've heard.
Yes. And you sure surprised me with that little act out front.
Your own part in it surprised me.
My part? Well, you wanted some kind of comeback, didn't you?
You asked for it, Mr.
You needn't
Hickson.
Explain anything.
You see, Mr. Baxter, Hickson's attitude requires a certain amount of sympathy. He's quite aware he's not our equal.
Oh, now, look.
Keep quiet, Toby. Mr. Baxter, just why did you come to my dressing room?
Well, professional courtesy.
If you've come here to make some sort of a bargain to buy Toby, it's no use. You can never have him.
Now, wait, Hickson.
Yes, wait, Hickson.
I won't have it, Toby. Never, never.
Whatever the Baxters have to say to me is my affair. Why don't you pretend you're a gentleman and make a graceful exit?
Oh, really? Toby, if you're trying to make me look ridiculous...
I'm succeeding. Yes, I know. Now go on over behind the screen and get your makeup off.
Very well. But I warn you...
Beat it! Pay no attention to him, Mrs. Baxter.
No,
I don't.
I don't understand.
This fellow's amazing.
Oh, not at all. He's stupid, really. Constantly interfering in my affairs. Mrs. Baxter, now that we're alone, may I tell you something? Something I'm sure you've heard before.
Well, what is it, Toby?
You're very beautiful. I'm very fond of you, Mrs. Baxter. And whatever Hickson thinks, you're really a very nice woman.
Oh, now, look here.
Mel, I don't like this.
Hickson.
Yeah?
Come out here.
Well, what is it?
Just how far do you want to carry a gag?
A gag?
Either you apologize to my wife...
Apologize for what? Really, Mr. Baxter, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mel, let's leave.
You're not going to leave me, are you, Mrs. Baxter? Please don't.
Oh, you're a very funny guy, Hickson.
Take me with you, Mr. Baxter. I just want to be near her. If you're afraid I'll make love to her, you needn't worry. I will.
Okay, Hickson, you asked for it.
No, Mel, don't hit him. Don't hit him. Mel, why did you do it?
Here now, what's going on?
I don't know what's eating this guy. A gag's a gag, but he doesn't know when to stop.
He looks a bit done in.
Well, he had it coming to him. Glad he didn't break the dummy when he fell.
Yes, that would have been a shame. He's such a cute little fella.
Oh, and you do care what happens to me. I love you, Mrs. Baxter. I love you.
Feeling all right again, old chap?
Yes, quite. Thank you, Bigelow.
Oh, good night, then.
No, it's not good night. This is goodbye.
What's that?
Yes, the manager sacked us, Toby and me.
Oh, well, now that's a pity.
Go on, say it. You're quite sure we had it coming to us.
Well, you did go too far with the Baxter.
I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with what Toby said.
Oh, I
It was say. Baxter. It was Baxter who put those words into Toby's mouth. He's trying to steal him from me.
Oh, now, see here.
It took us 15 years to make the Kit Kat. And we had only two nights here. You just think what Toby and I have done together. We've fought our way to the very top. After years of cheap, dirty music halls. Starving. Out at the elbow. Oh, you know what it's like, Bigelow. Always trying to perfect the act. Toby's a partner anyone would want. And Baxter's no exception.
All right, old boy. Then you'd better take good care of Toby.
No, never fear. I'll never fear. I shall. He's locked in my dressing room right now, and tonight and every other night we are going to sleep behind locked doors until Mel Baxter leaves London.
Mel, be careful. It's Hickson. And the door isn't locked.
Where is Toby?
Get out, Hickson.
I've come for Toby. Where is he? You've stolen Toby from me, and I've come to take him back.
I haven't seen your dummy since we were in your dressing room tonight. You lie!
You came and stole him from me whilst I was asleep.
Sure. I never travel without my burglar tools. Now listen, Hickson. I only knocked you down before, but this time I'm going to finish a job.
Mel!
I'll handle this my way, baby.
No, Mel, look. On the floor.
What?
On the floor at the foot of my bed.
Toby!
What? Oh, Claudia, how did...
Toby, there you are. I found you. Oh, my poor little Toby. She kidnapped you.
Now, look, Hickson, I haven't the slightest idea how your dummy got here.
Toby,
Mel, look how he's shaking that awful thing.
Wake up, Toby.
Trying to wake it up.
Oh, come now, you're not deceiving me. You know I'm here.
Go away and leave me alone. I'm through with you, Hickson.
I can't stand it, Mel.
Easy, baby. Now, look here, Hickson, maybe you're ill or mad or
something. Ill, then. You took Toby away from me, and you say I'm ill?
I didn't take him. You brought him here. You must have. Maybe while you were walking in your sleep.
Mel, he's got a gun.
He won't shoot.
Come with me, Toby. We are going home again.
No, Hickson. I won't go with you. I'm going to stay here forever.
What? This is some trick. Baxter, you've influenced him against me. You're putting words into his mouth.
Oh, look, Hickson, will you relax? I tell you, I had nothing to do with this. I couldn't have.
Nothing to do with it? You're a devil, Baxter. You tried to steal Toby away from me, and now you're trying to drive me mad.
Yes, then will you listen to reason?
No! No, I won't listen to reason. I won't. Beast, Toby.
Pick up this gun before it hits somebody with a baby.
I've got it, Mel.
It's not true.
Stay where you are, Hickson.
What? Oh, no. Oh, no, I'll do nothing of the sort. You're insane.
Hickson, you're the one who's sick. I'm trying to help you.
Help me! You're trying to take Toby away from me.
Look, will you let me get a doctor for
you? No! You fool! You'll never get Toby away from me. I'll take him where you'll never see him again. Never!
Hickson! Claudia, that man's desperately ill. We've got to get a doctor. I suppose we should have called the cops, Doctor, but
Well, Hickson's in the profession, and if he's sick, we'd rather have a doctor look after him.
I appreciate your sentiments, Mr. Baxter.
What's made him act this way? What's wrong with him?
Well, I can't give an opinion without seeing him, without talking with him. But perhaps your husband may have some ideas.
Me?
You're a ventriloquist, Mr. Baxter, but a more successful one than Hickson. And two, you're happily married, less introspective, perhaps. Isn't it quite possible that Hickson, in his loneliness, his struggles for success, may have become so accustomed to thinking as two people that the personalities have actually become divided?
Why, I don't know. Yeah, I can see how that might happen.
You mean he thinks he's two people?
No, Mrs. Baxter, he doesn't think he's two people. It's possible he doesn't know these personalities have become divided, that Toby now might be said to live within Hickson without Hickson's knowing. And
then what's going to happen to him?
Well, it's something he'll have to fight out within himself. If we can keep the dummy away from him, he may recover.
Oh, but doctor, he took it with him.
And we've no time to lose. Where does he live? Have you any idea?
No, but I can find out.
Well, then we better go at once. He must be separated from that dummy.
Right back where you started.
Be quiet, you fool. Be quiet.
You can't keep me quiet. You never could. Where would you have been if I'd kept quiet?
How can you be so ungrateful? I made you what you are.
You made me. Until I came along, you were very small time, Hickson. Very small time.
You've forgotten that you're nothing but a lifeless, useless stick of wood without me.
A lifeless, useless stick of wood, am I? It was I she liked, not you. It was I Mrs. Baxter spoke kindly to. It was I she smiled at, not you.
But you wouldn't even be here without me.
A lifeless, useless stick of wood. You couldn't even get up the nerve to kill Baxter tonight.
Kill him? Yeah. Yes, that's it. You wanted me to kill him.
Why didn't you kill him? Then she could have belonged to me. I could be with her forever.
Oh, you fool. You know that's impossible.
You're just saying that. You're jealous. Jealous. Jealous.
Oh, Toby. Toby, please. Don't say these things.
It's the truth. You're a weakling, a coward.
Toby, I beg you.
You mean nothing to me anymore, Hickson. You're weak.
No, no, I'm not. You monster. Oh, more than the mind can bear. I can't stand it. I've got to get rid of you. I'll kill you. I'll destroy you.
Hickson, take your hands off me. I'm through with you. Take your hands off me.
No, I'll kill you. You vulgar little beast.
Hickson, stop.
Die, you monster. Break your head. Now, Dark Bat, you little monster, you'll die, you hear? Now tell me I'm weak.
You can't kill me, Hickson. No matter how you try, you can't kill me. You're still a failure.
I'll show you who's a failure! Toby. What have I done? Toby, I never meant to. Answer me, Toby.
Hickson, are you in there?
Don't wait, Mel. Try the door. There we are.
Okay, there he is, Doctor.
Mel, we're too late.
Now, easy now. Perhaps he's only fainted. Doctor, look. The dummy. Smashed to bits.
I can't believe it's real.
Breathe easy, honey. Take it easy. Hickson's breathing. He's just out for a minute.
Oh, Mel. What'll happen when he comes to? And he realizes what he's done to Toby.
Oh, how are you, Hickson? Steady now. You're coming around all right.
There you see, honey. It's all right. He's opening his eyes.
Now, don't try to sit up, Hickson. No. Just lie back and be still for a moment.
He's looking for Toby.
Yeah. When he sees him. Now, don't try to sit up, Hickson. Your dummy's a bit cracked up, but I guess he could be fixed.
fixed. He said he'd kill me. But I told him he couldn't.
Mel!
Doctor. Doctor, it's Hickson speaking in Toby's voice.
He said he'd kill me. As if he could. Mr. Baxter.
Doctor, what about Hickson? Hickson himself. I've never seen anything like this. Oh, Hickson, Hickson, speak up, man.
Quick, Baxter, put that dummy together again.
Well, it's pretty badly spread.
I don't care. Hold him together if you have to.
I'll do what I can.
What good would it do, Doctor?
It's our one chance to help this man.
See, Hickson? Here's Toby. See, he's all right. Here he is.
Hickson won't appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Baxter. Now you're giving me...
back to him. He thought you were trying to steal me away from him.
Mr. Hickson!
Huh? Oh, yeah, it's you, Mrs. Baxter.
Toby, what's happened to you?
You and Toby both had a little accident, Mr. Hickson.
Baxter!
Mr. Baxter had nothing to do with it. He and Mrs. Baxter are your friends. They were worried about you. They called me. I'm a doctor.
Oh, yeah, I'm very grateful. Thank you. Thank you awfully.
Well, we told the doctor how Toby'd been acting up this evening.
Oh, yes. And now I remember. Yes, yes, you were a very bad boy, Toby. You said so many things that I didn't put into your mouth. You can't go on like this, you know. If he acts to succeed, you ruined us tonight, Toby. It's going to be a long, hard fight to get back.
I'm not really angry with you, Hickson.
I'm glad. We are dependent on each other, Toby. You know that. Promise me you'll behave from now on. Promise you won't say anything I don't put into your mouth.
I promise. But still, I can have my own ideas.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 21st, 1947, that was an audition program produced by CBS for network consideration, which they would have a lot of success at. Later in that summer of 1947, in July to be exact, Escape would begin its 7-year run on radio, wrapping up in September 1954, making way for the new Gunsmoke series. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of Quiet Please called Clarissa, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from April 19th, 1948.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Clarissa.
No. He was dead before the fire started. I've told you that a dozen times. No, I can't prove it, of course not. You'll just have to believe me. Take my word for it. I can't prove he was dead. You can't prove he wasn't. And anyway, what difference does it make now? I'm sorry. I can't hear you very well. Yes. Well, all right. It was an old black shell of a house. A house that has lived too long. A house where the floors groaned in pain at night, where the windows shuddered at the gentlest touch of the wind. Her door latches suddenly gave up their grip and let the night come sniffing into the house to paw at your eyes and wake you to the other silences that lay around you. It was never warm there. In the winter, old Heinz kept a fire going in the fireplace in the old sitting room, but the logs were scrawny and the draft was bad. And the flames seemed to grudge us their warmth so that we shivered all through the day. We're glad when night came and we could escape to the meager comfort of the drafty bedrooms. And in the summer, there was a dampness about the place. An unhealthy clamminess drifted from the walls and stirred uneasily among the ancient smells of decay that clung to the place. Well, I suppose you could call old Heinz a character. You said you didn't know him? An immigrant from the Rhineland sometime in the early 70s. That would make him, let me see, how old?
Ich war im Rheinland geboren. In der Jahrzeit 1862.
That's right, 1862. He was an old man, but he never appeared old. You might have taken him for a vigorous man of 60. His hair and his scraggly mustache were jet black. I suspect he dyed them regularly. And his blue eyes seemed as keen as those of a boy of 18. And he'd never been away from the house for a single night, he used to say, from the day he bought it and moved into it in 1888. And it was an old house then. Yes, I spent some very dreary days and nights in that house. Huh? I couldn't afford a better place to live. No, people don't go to live in a haunted house if they can find another place, you know. I'd heard it was haunted before I went there to live. Do you believe in haunted houses? No. Neither did I, of course. Well, I agree, it did look like a haunted house. I've told you about the sounds in the night. I mean, I've told you about some of the sounds in the night. Yes, of course, there were other sounds. Well, please, let me tell it my own way. Well, Clarissa, for instance. Clarissa in particular. Clarissa above everything else. I had lived there nearly a year. Heinz and I sat that first night alongside the fireplace. I remember he'd asked me to share a bottle of Ben Kustler Doctor with him. We sat in front of the stingy little fire. There was a kerosene lamp on the table, and Heinz in his old black coat with the sleeves that were too short.
You like the wine then, Jesse?
Very much.
I have not much left. This is from before the war when it was easier to get, you see, but now it is almost their last.
You shouldn't be so generous with it, Heinz.
No. Good wine always schmeckt besser when with a friend you drink, nicht wahr? A little more?
Not for a moment, thanks.
Yes, to sit by the fire and look down into the coals and see images of the things past. And drink wine and see the images grow clearer. It is good in the old age.
You've lived here alone for a long time?
Yeah, for a long time. Long time. I'm used to it. Used to the nights and the little fire and the silences.
Yes.
It is cold for this time of the year.
Listen.
Was it Lois?
Oh, I thought I heard someone singing.
So?
Did you hear anything?
It is Clarissa.
What did you say?
Clarissa, my daughter.
Well, I didn't know you had a daughter, Heinz.
Yes. Will some more wine?
No, thanks. I haven't seen her around.
No.
Well, is she... Excuse me, Heinz.
You will forgive me, Jesse. She's a child. I do not wish you to be bothered.
Why, she wouldn't bother me, Heinz. I like children.
There's enough left here in the bottle for one more for each of us, huh?
Thank you, Heinz.
And yes, schlaf wohl.
And I drank the last of the wine with the old man. And then I climbed the creaking stairs to the dreary little room, carrying the kerosene lamp in one hand and casting fabulous shadows on the peeling wallpaper. Seeing the ancient plush-covered rocking chair nodding away at me as I entered the room, as if a startled occupant had suddenly deserted it at the sound of my footsteps on the stairs. And the cold spring rain drenching the window panes. And the murmured complaints of the beams and rafters of the old house. The pleasant, musty fumes of the wine I had drunk kept sleep away for a while when I'd blown out the lamp. The melody of that children's song flowed again across my mind as I lay there. My thoughts wandered to the lonely child that dwelt in the haunted house with the old man and the new-come student. I smiled to myself as I thought, now that settles the question of the house being haunted, doesn't it? People have heard the little girl singing to herself in the night. They've not known that a little girl lived here too. And yeah, that's the ghost. And I smiled again at superstitions. And another idle thought struck me. I wondered at the child's age. 10 or 12 years old by the sound of her voice. And somewhere in the back of my drowsy mind, I seemed to remember that Heinz had told me Helena, his wife, had died. When was it, the year of the San Francisco earthquake? Well, that would be 1906. That would be 42 years ago. And this was a child of 10 or 12. I must have been mistaken. I was getting sleepy. Wine in the rain. You wanted the whole story. I'm telling it to you. In the morning, Heinz was working in his garden, and the early sun made the old house seem a little more cheerful, a little more livable. There was a tinge of green through the gray of the fields that surround the house, and Heinz told me he'd seen a robin. I stood and watched him a long time, and I don't think he noticed how my eyes wandered to the windows of the old house, searching for a flash of color that might be a child's hair ribbon, or how I listened for the sound of a young boy singing a little song the children who danced so long ago on the bridges of Avignon. I didn't even notice that I was humming a song under my breath. Shall I pong
Davis? Song, Nick.
What? Oh.
Well, that's Clarissa's song.
That kid used to sing it when I was young.
Yeah, my wife is French. She taught the song to Clarissa.
Oh?
Yeah, it is an old song.
How old is your daughter, Heinz?
Yeah.
How old?
Oh, she is young.
Is she pretty?
Oh, yeah. You had breakfast?
Yeah, coffee. I found it on the stove.
Clarissa made it.
Oh, did she?
You'd better go to work now, huh?
Yes, I suppose so. You don't need to keep the little girl out of sight on my account, Heinz. I like children.
Oh, she bother you.
Oh, no, I've got a little sister back home.
Oh, yeah?
Miriam. She's 11.
Clarissa is older.
Oh? Miriam's got bright yellow hair.
Clarissa has dark hair.
Yeah, I got a picture of her here.
Oh, so? She's very pretty. I have no picture of Clarissa.
Well, that's too bad.
Well, I'll see you tonight, huh?
Yeah, sure, Heinz. I should have let the thing drop then and there. If the old man felt that children should be kept away from adults, that was his privilege, of course. And although I was often lonely for other company than the old man, I was a dweller in his house, naturally subject to his wishes. My work? No, I never left the place. My book? Well, I was writing a book. No, not very exciting. Mathematics. I have some theories. No. The book is gone. The fire, you remember? I could understand Heinz. I thought he obviously had a great respect for a man's work, especially a work of such apparent erudition. I must not be disturbed. I might stay in my room day and night with my slide rules and my profile paper and my broken flower pot full of sharpened pencils. I was not to be disturbed. But How many times I wished for the happy sound of my little sister Miriam's gay laughter. Found myself listening for the lilt of the little girl song that she used to sing. And that Clarissa knew, too. Heinz mentioned Clarissa occasionally.
I sometimes wish that I could have sent Clarissa to school, Jesse.
Why, it's too bad you didn't.
Always there was never enough money.
Why, there are schools. Public schools, Heinz.
No, not for Clarissa's free schools.
You know, I wonder.
Wonder?
Well, you know, children are supposed to go to school. I'm surprised that the school authorities haven't been to see about sending her.
The police?
Oh, no, not the police. But there are laws about schools. I mean, you might find yourself in trouble if they discover you have a daughter of school age.
They will come here.
Well, if they find out.
Jesse, you will not tell.
Now, look here, Heinz. You're not being fair to the child.
Yes.
No, really, I mean it. Hasn't she ever been to school?
Well, I teach her a little.
Well, Heinz, it's none of my business. But you're doing her a very serious harm.
No. Listen, Jesse. You don't tell anybody about her.
Well, I don't know, Heinz. If they come and ask me...
Jesse, listen. I tell you something.
Well?
Clarissa can't go to school.
Well, why not? I told you it doesn't cost anything.
It is not that.
Well, then?
She's not well.
Oh, I'm sorry, Heinz. Look, would you like it if I gave her a little of my time and taught her some of the elementary...
No, please, don't.
Well, I'd be glad to.
No.
Well, have it your way, Heinz. I don't mean to intrude on your affairs, but after all, a child...
I'm sorry, Jesse. I thank you, but no.
All right. Forget it. But I couldn't forget it. A kindly old man. Yes, he was kindly. And a sick child who had never seen the inside of a schoolroom, who was growing up to become... what? In an ancient, moldering house. A house that had lived too long. Alone with a father born 86 years ago. Alone at night in the darkness with the house grumbling and complaining around me. I thought about the plight of the child. Sometimes I could hear her song far away somewhere in the dank recesses of that crumbling house. And my thoughts revolved again about this mystery. Heinz said she was not well. Heinz would not allow her to appear. Was Clarissa some misshapen monster child that she must be pent up and never see the sun? Was she... I detest mysteries of that kind. I love the good, clean mysteries of abscissa and ordinate, the logarithm and antilogarithm of the calculus and the grand old theorems devised by the ancients. But the fascinating mysteries of the human mind and of human behavior are alien to me. They're my hate. And my thoughts crept further and further away from the 10 numbers as doubt and speculation about the child laid hold of my mind. In the night, how often I heard her sobs, I thought, sometimes close outside my door. Yet when I opened the door, there was nothing. And old Heinz grew more and more taciturn. He never spoke of his daughter. He seemed to avoid me by day and to disappear by night. But the summer came then, and the fall, and winter. My book was going badly, and my thoughts wandered. I must leave this place, I thought, or find out this mystery. And again I asked the old man if there was not something I might do for this pathetic child, this invisible, haunting voice.
No, Jesse. There is nothing you could do.
But Christmas is coming, Heinz. What can I get her for a Christmas?
No, why not, Jesse?
What?
My Helene. She died on the eve of Christmas.
But Heinz, you owe it to the child.
No. Let us not speak of it again.
But to me, the thought of Christmas passing by this child was unspeakable. I determined that if the old man would do nothing about it, I would. You know, I had little money. There was so little I could do. But I did come into the town here, and I found a toy for her. I found one I could afford. A little woolly white lamb with black buttons for eyes and a blue silk ribbon about its neck and a gay little blue flower in its mouth. Well, I hung a little card about its neck that said, Merry Christmas to Clarissa. And on Christmas Eve, Heinz and I shared the last bottle of Ben Kostler Doctor before the miserly little fire. And I gave him one of the handkerchiefs my little sister Miriam had sent me, and he gave me an old stone krug with a heavy pewter top that he said came from Heidelberg. And we regretted that there was no creamy Pilsner Urquell to drink from it. Wished each other a happy Christmas. And then, in the night, I was awakened by a tiny sound. And I lay awake silently for a moment. And there was another sound. A hesitant little footstep. And a rustling at the dresser across the room from me. And I lay quietly and listened. Is that you, Clarissa? Is that you, Clarissa? Do you like it? Good. Happy Christmas. I'm sorry, that's all I could get you. But I hope you like it. And I felt the touch of a tiny hand on my shoulder, and lips brushed my cheek, and the door closed, and the sound of her voice in the little song was happier now than I'd ever heard it. That Clarissa was not a ghost, but a living person. And I felt more at peace with myself as I realized that this was what had been plucking at the corners of my mind. And I was happy now that I knew she really lived, that I was not living in the midst of fantasy. I had wondered what Heinz would say. He was perfectly natural about it.
It was good of you, Jesse.
Good? What?
To find a gift for Clarissa.
Oh, did she like it? Well, I'm glad.
She asked me to say Dankeschön to you.
Then I say Bitte schön.
Ach, it is good. You're a kind person, Jesse.
I wish it could have been more.
Oh, it is a very rich gift. Never has she had such a thing.
Is she going to have Christmas dinner with us, Heinz?
No.
So, I had won a little victory in this conflict with the darkness. But I was to go no further. I asked Heinz about her. Heinz answered shortly. I suggested that a birthday gift might be in order if I only knew her birthday. I proposed writing to my own sister and begging her for outworn storybooks that Clarissa might read, even if she must stay aloof from the rest of the house. Heinz did not reply. Everything was as it had always been, so long as the name of Clarissa was not mentioned. But when it came in the late spring, when it was cold and windy again, and the raw snow pelted against the windows and the whole house shivered, I heard her crying again in the night. And there was a quality in her voice this time that brought me out of the bed and into the hall. I called in alarm. Clarissa! I stepped back into my room and lit the kerosene lamp. And as I stepped out again toward the hallway, Heinz confronted me.
What's my answer, Jesse?
Why, can't you hear her, Heinz? Something's wrong, she's sick.
No, go back by your room, Jesse.
Oh, but Heinz!
Don't beat her, Jesse! Go back.
Now, Heinz, listen to me. Something's awfully wrong with that child, and
I will take care of her, Jesse.
Please, Heinz.
In your room.
Now, see here,
I take care of my own man, huh? Heinz!
Is my poor
reached for the door at once, but it was locked from the outside. And I beat on it and stormed at it in the cold. But for once it held. I screamed at the father, threatening every kind of vengeance on him. Till at last I suddenly realized that I was being hysterically silly. In the silence, I could hear nothing but the moan of the wind around the rusty cornices of the house and the hiss of snowflakes against the window. And I sat down, shaken, bitter at myself for giving way to such an outburst over a child's crying in the night. And at last I lay down again. And in the frosty silence of the early dawn, I fell asleep. And when I awoke hours later and found my door unlocked again, Heinz was not to be found. Not that day, nor the next. I tramped through the house, opening doors, calling him, calling Clarissa. There was not a sound to answer me. I found a little wood and made a miserable fire. I suppose I ate. I don't remember any too well. And at night I went to bed, till I, shivering for hours, straining my ears for a sound. The sound of a child's song. The sound of a father's footstep in the cold darkness. Then it was morning, nearly morning. Gray fingers of morning plucking at the frost-rimed windows. And I awoke to see Heinz standing beside my bed. In the 2 days, he seemed to have aged 20 years. He was an old, old man. He spoke to me.
Jesse, my friend.
What's the matter, Heinz?
No much matter, Jesse. I am dying.
Why, Heinz?
It is finished now, Jesse. Alles ist vorüber.
Sit down.
No. Hear me. See, the key to Clarissa's room. You take it.
Oh, is she all right?
Too late for me now. Go. Clarissa's room. Do what is to be done.
I lifted him to the bed. I bent over him. I listened for his heart. There was no sound. Heinz was dead. Yes, just as I told you before, he died. He died there in my room, yes. What? Oh, yes. In the little half-light, I found the kerosene lamp and I lit it. I took the key from the floor where he dropped it. No. I found the room very easily. It was at the far end of the hall. I called. Clarissa? Clarissa? And there was no answer. So I unlocked the door. And holding the light above my head, I walked over to the bed. And there, lying on the bed, dressed in a pinafore that might have come out of a 10-year-old drawing in Alice in Wonderland. Clutching a little woolly lamb to her breast, there lay a tiny, old, old woman with long white hair braided into pigtails. Clarissa. And I knew why I hadn't heard the little song. 2 days. And so when the lamp dropped out of my hand and the flames started licking around the dry-as-dust draperies and the fragile old oaken boards in the floor, I turned and went out of the house. Well, what else was there to do? The house had lived too long. And so had the father and daughter who dwelt there.
Quiet Please for tonight was called Clarissa, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And Heinz was played by Bruno Vick. Clarissa by Peggy Stanley. As usual, music for Quiet Please is by Albert Berman. Now a word from our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
The characters in tonight's Quiet Please are neither living nor dead. They enjoy neither of these interesting conditions because they're solely the invention of my own imagination, intended to represent nobody at all. Quiet Please for next week is called 13 and 8.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please comes to you from New York. This is the world's largest network, serving more than 450 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Quiet Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of April, 1948 on Mutual, wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.